You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Throughout 2014, Yosemite National Park will be celebrating the 150th anniversary of the Yosemite Grant Act, which was, in many ways, the beginning of the national park system that we have today. That's been the focus of my conversation with writer and filmmaker Dayton Duncan. His new book, Seed of the Future, was just released last week. He and I were talking about the perspective that we all gained during the government shutdown when the national parks were closed, and we picked up our conversation after I asked him whether he thought that someday we might return to state ownership of national parks.
That model turned out not to work very well.
Right.
The political maneuvering in Yosemite ended up with the people who were running it were often, political appointees. People that wanted to do things that shouldn't be done in there could use their political influence to get that done. And all that became very obvious by the end of the 19th century. Meanwhile, Yellowstone, which was the first national park 8 years after Yosemite, it was really created to be modeled on the Yosemite model, but there was no state to give it to in 1872. Wyoming was a territory, so there was no state to give it to. So almost by happenstance, they said, well, let's make it a, quote, national park, and the federal government will be in charge of it, which at the time didn't seem like that big a deal. When you think about it now in retrospect, and ultimately Yosemite became a national park for the same reason, because when you have the control of it a little bit farther away, when it belongs to all Americans versus just Californians or just Wyoming residents, it gives us a sense both of pride and responsibility that a greater number of us share. I think that that model has proved itself. Now, over the years, that model has been adopted by nations across the world. It's one of our greatest exports, the idea of national parks. And if you look at the history of state parks, well, look at it here in the state of California, and you can see what a spotty record it is. California actually had one of the great state park systems in the nation. I would say probably still does, except that, you've run into problems about funding and then closing and then maybe selling them off and stuff like that. You haven't got to that point with federal parks, and I don't think we will.
By 1903, 8 national parks had sprouted from the idea that began with Yosemite.
Everybody needs beauty as well as bread, places to play in and pray in. When nature may heal and give strength to body and soul alike. This natural beauty hunger is made manifest in our magnificent national parks. Nature's sublime wonderlands, the admiration and joy of the world. John Muir.
The book focuses on each section of Yosemite's discovery, how we did find it, how the people came to it in droves. In fact, a chapter's titled As Famed as Niagara. Then how we almost destroyed it, with a chapter titled Perversion of the Trust, and how we saved it. So if you were going to pick just one section of that history, which, Dayton, is the most profound to you and the part that you want all of us to know?
As somebody who believes so deeply in this notion, in the genius of the idea, and in how embedded it is in who we are as a people and in the idea of America, I am constantly drawn to the notion of we are still trying to fulfill the document that founded us with the Declaration of Independence. That's a journey that our nation is still on. And we get better at it, but we still have a long way to go. And so with Yosemite, I would look to the salvation part of it. And I think that is the larger message, if you will, of the book. And so I'd point you to the light instead of to the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't be Pollyanna-ish about it. We have to understand that there are always forces out there. Part of who we are as Americans is that there are always forces out there that will look at a beautiful mountainside and wonder, I wonder if there's precious metals underneath there. There's always going to be someone that's going to look at a beautiful valley and say, I wonder if we split this up into a subdivision of trophy homes, I bet we could make a lot of money. We will always have somebody who's going to look at a forest and convert it in their mind into board feet of timber. That's who we are as Americans, too. But we are also, as Americans, people who can step back occasionally from that impulse and say, no, this is too special to let happen to it what we have allowed to happen to the rest of the continent. And those places, in general, are our national parks.
If people would like to participate in this marking of history that happens next year, what options are out there?
Well, I would say, first of all, particularly people listening here, I mean, if you're in the Sacramento area, you're a lot closer than I am in New Hampshire to just decide on a weekend or part of a day to go see this thing for yourself. Nothing takes the place of going and experiencing Yosemite in person. So first of all, I'd say honor the 150th by going there. Go see those incredible waterfalls pouring in like sacraments into the valley. Go and just stand in the presence of the grizzly giant or any of the sequoias in the Mariposa Grove, living things that have been there for 3,000 years. Just drink in that silence and that wisdom, if you will, of these things that have stood there for so long. Go for a hike up in the high country and just, as John Muir would say, climb the mountains and get their good tidings. So I would say do that. But in doing that, rededicate yourself to at least giving something back somehow. That can be as simple as supporting people politicians who support national parks and conservation in general. It can also be give a donation to the Yosemite Conservancy. It could be volunteer to help clear a trail or doing something. All the options are there for you. But I think it begins with that personal chance to find that transformative moment that you can have at a place as special as Yosemite. So my first direction is climb the mountains and get their good tidings.
Mm-hmm. Dayton, thank you for the conversation, and I hope you enjoy your time in California.
Thank you. I'm sure I will.
Dayton Duncan's book is titled Seed of the Future, Yosemite and the Evolution of the National Park Idea. We've posted a link to the short film related to the book that was produced by Ken Burns and Dayton Duncan. Also, as I mentioned, some of the beautiful pictures. That's at capradio.org/insight. And I'll leave you with the rest of John Muir's writing, the passage that I quoted at the beginning of this conversation. He wrote, "The tendency nowadays is to wander in wilderness. It's delightful to see thousands of tired, nerve-shaken, over-civilized people beginning to find out that going to the mountains is going home, that wilderness is a necessity, and that mountain parks and reservations are useful not only as fountains of timber and irrigating rivers, but as fountains of life." He writes, "Even the scenery habit in its most artificial forms, mixed with spectacles, silliness, and Kodaks, its devotees arrayed more gorgeously than scarlet tanagers, frightening the wild game with red umbrellas, even this is encouraging and may well be regarded as a hopeful sign for the future." That's Insight for today. I'm Beth Ruyak. Insight's senior producer is Jen Picard. Our producer is James Morrison. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. As we begin this week after Thanksgiving, thank you for joining us.